I'm Marty Moscoe. Welcome to Radio Times. Philadelphia's political and education leaders are high on community schools, especially after a visit to Euler School in Cincinnati last Friday. It has an array of healthcare services, plus a food bank, tutors, and therapists on site. There are some 5,000 community schools in the country. Their mission is to deal with the whole child, and in many cases, the whole neighborhood, making the school a hub for more than just reading, writing, and arithmetic. Philadelphia Mayor-elect Jim Kenney wants to open 25 community schools over the next 4 years. Today on Radio Times, we look at the track record for community schools, how they can be implemented in Philadelphia, and we begin our conversation with Daryl Clark. He's president of the Philadelphia City Council, part of the Philadelphia contingent that went to Cincinnati on Friday. Daryl Clark, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much.
So what did you see at Euler School that got you so excited?
Well, as I said, I don't normally get excited in public, but I tell you, when I walked in that facility and saw what I saw, I was blown away. I mean, I was so excited at the business model, so excited as it relates to the relationship between the young people and the people that were delivering that service. It was awesome. That's all I can say. I actually liked the way they structured it. So there wasn't a traditional government-funded program, and they were able to use the private sector and the corporate community to put this model together. Pretty much every school, I think it's 55 or 56 schools, has a community school model in
Cincinnati.
Absolutely. So it's awesome. As you said in your lead-in, there are currently a significant number of community schools across the country. But in the city of Philadelphia, we probably have a couple, but nothing close to what we saw. So if you turn the dial back around a year and a half ago, as you know, there were a significant number of schools closed, and the community came up, and they were extremely upset about what was going on. And it did give us an opportunity to have very, very detailed discussion about the challenges associated with those schools that closed and even the ones that were continuing to stay open. And, you know, it was clear that there were challenges with those children outside of the classroom. A lot of challenges in the classroom, but the external aspect of that child's ability to learn was clear. So we looked at opportunities and we looked at a number of things. After our budget process, the school district indicated that they had around three or four models currently in operation. There are 256 schools. I believe that number is correct. So it's clear that we have a long way to go in Philly. So what we did is decided to look at models across the country, and we found Cincinnati, which was the premier community school model, and a number of us went out and checked it out, and we were really blown away by what we saw.
You made an interesting comment about it, which is that we do have a system that provides a whole host of services to people. These are people who are inmates in our prison system.
That's right.
I mean, the idea is, which is, I hadn't quite thought of it that way, but the idea is what, taking what we do in prisons and doing them in schools?
That's right. Well, you know, I had the occasion to travel to a prison. It was this big controversy about whether or not the House of Corrections should be closed and build a new school, and people were concerned about that process. But I visited the House of Correction, and they had educational opportunities in there, people getting their GED. They had health care, dental care, mental health treatment, every aspect of what a person needs in one building. So my position is, if we can do it in a prison, a number of prisons across the area, then why can't we figure out a way to deliver that model on the front side in these schools? And that's what we're going to do.
I'll be talking with Superintendent Hyde a little bit later on in the show, but is the idea that children provided all these social services will be better learners, they'll have higher test scores, they can achieve more? Or is it saying to the community, here's a school, here's a place where you can come and you can be welcome and you can get services?
Right. Yeah, each one of these services is clearly in various locations throughout the city of Philadelphia. There's not a library in every neighborhood. There's not a dental office in every neighborhood, but there's a school in every neighborhood. So our position is, why don't you bring those services to those schools so we can adequately treat not only the children, but the adults in that particular community? So that's why we chose schools for this model. The reality is that there are a lot of young people who have challenges outside of the classroom. Some have some issues with respect to the family, some dysfunctional issues. Children have health care issues. A lot of children actually come to school hungry in the morning. And frankly speaking, if you're in a position like that, it's unlikely that you're going to have a opportunity to reach your full peak capacity as it relates to your learning capabilities. So we want to make sure that we prepare the external side of the child, but do it in the actual school so we can have a good sense of monitoring that child. And I guarantee you that that child will be a much better student.
Mayor-elect Jim Kenney has said he wants to open 25, thinking that it will cost, what, the district something like $8 million. Now, that doesn't seem like a lot of money. And I know in Cincinnati, they had a $1 billion bond that they floated in order to be able to do this. Can you really provide all these services for $8 million in Philadelphia?
Well, I actually have a little more aggressive pace than Mayor-elect Kenney, and we'll hopefully end up – I like to see 25 the first year, and I'm always pretty aggressive. And you know,
for 2016?
Yeah, for 2016, because that the sense of urgency, and I know the Mayor-elect feels the same way, is there. The reality is that I think our ability to currently convert certain aspects of community schools immediately is there. As an example, we have various universities, which, by the way, are all a part of this process, and they committed to providing support. They have healthcare vans, a dental van, right? You bring that dental van to the school twice a week, and you tell the young people in the school, you have an opportunity to go in there's like these Winnebago type of vans, and you have an opportunity to access that health care in the interim until we get a capital construction or a physical structure that can accommodate them. So I like to see us be as aggressive as possible. There are schools currently that have vacant space. I went to a school up on Ridge Avenue called Amy 6. They have an entire wing that's currently vacant. This would be an ideal opportunity to put this community school model in that particular school. So I think that we should move ahead as soon as possible.
There has been some research both in Cincinnati, some other cities that have instituted some of these community schools. They haven't seen dramatic gains when it comes to test scores and academic performance. That really, I mean, that has lagged, I guess, behind the expectations. Mm-hmm. Is there a danger of trying to oversell this, thinking that we will, educate all these children and provide all their health care services, and we're going to see everything go up?
Well, I don't want people to think that this is the only thing we need to do. The simple reality is that we need annualized sustainable funding from Harrisburg, and, you know, who knows where that's going to end up. But we currently have an annual crisis, and it's all centered around funding. So until you can get some sustainability and some stability as it relates to the classroom portion and the workforce, meaning the PFT and other support staff, we're not going to be in a position to move ahead. And then I think that we need to get a little more creative around the curriculum. Dr. Height and I had talked about a number of issues that we think need to be put in place, and he's relatively creative. I think he's going to come up with some structures as soon as we can stabilize our fiscal situation.
When do you think that will happen? And I'm talking about stabilizing the fiscal situation.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that we get a reasonable number as it relates to the money coming out of Harrisburg in this budget process. I got to tell you, at this point, sitting here with you, I'm not overly optimistic, but at some point we have to fund the schools in Pennsylvania because this is not a Philadelphia problem.
You've been quoted as saying that community schools would make Philadelphia a much better city. And as we know, for a number of families that have the wherewithal when it comes to their children and their children going to schools, many people living in this city have options, and sometimes they opt out of the city.
Yep.
Do you see this as a way of keeping people in the city and having them attend these schools?
Absolutely. I represent Center City and other parts of the city, and in Center City schools, there are a lot of people who actually have options because of the income levels associated with those folks. And people are pretty excited about the increase in population in Center City and the surrounding communities. But when that child becomes 5 years old, unfortunately, a lot of people are going to use those options, and they're going to leave the city of Philadelphia for a better opportunity for education. So we have to do that. The challenge with us is that there are neighborhoods where people don't have options, and it's our responsibility to make sure that we deal with that educational opportunity for those children, and the community school models, I believe, is a clear example of what we need to do, both for the child and for the household.
So focusing on more low-income schools that are really struggling.
Yeah. When we were in Cincinnati, they talked about the different neighborhoods and different models for different neighborhoods. So in the more affluent communities, the community school model was different than it was in some of the more lower and moderate-income neighborhoods. They talked about a particular school in a more affluent neighborhood, and the most significant aspect of what they delivered was daycare and after-school care, because the assumption is that the parents work, and also provided more mental health care, which I found kind of interesting. But in some of the other schools, there were different, more traditional models. So I think it, you know, whatever fits for that particular community will work, and whatever works for the city of Philadelphia, because we will not be exactly like Pennsylvania, like Cincinnati, I'm sorry.
Are there schools in your particular district that you would like to have become community schools?
Absolutely. Well, I always start home. Strawberry Mansion High School is adjacent to Leslie Pinckley Hill School. Same size buildings. Leslie Pinckley Hill School actually closed as a part of that large school closure. And we have actually started a process where we have a number of services going in that building. PAL, that does great work with kids. We're actually going to put a roof on the gym, and PAL is going to run programs out of that. We have a program that's going to teach people how to cook. We have a program, Northeast Treatment Center, that will deal with individuals who need support for mental health issues. So there's already opportunities in these neighborhoods, and I think that we should be as aggressive as possible and get them up and running.
Will this be a sustainable model? And by that, I mean exist beyond all the enthusiasm that so many people, including yourself, have now.
It better be.
It better be?
It better be.
Or what?
Or we're going to be in trouble, not just us as the elected officials, but these communities. Something has to happen, and we have to approach this in a different, more creative way as it relates to the way we deliver services. In Cincinnati, as I said earlier, it doesn't cost the city a dime. These children are qualified, and a number of their parents are qualified for certain support from the federal and state government. And what we're talking about is bringing these services. Those models, the Delta Dental as an example, don't mean to promote them in a commercial, but they have a facility that they don't charge a dime. Their school or the school gives them a space. They come in, they have a built-in clientele, which are the students, and they come in and they have billable services that they get paid for, and they've said that they're doing quite well. Mm. So I don't know why we can't replicate that here in the city of Philadelphia.
So this is like Title I funding?
Title I funding, yes.
Using Medicaid? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm thinking of all the various, mm-hmm. Federal government
Social
services?
Social Security, exactly. Because these people are eligible to get this service. The question is, do they have the ability to access those services in remote areas, which is currently the case? So we're trying to bring those to every neighborhood in the city of Philadelphia for the child and for the parents. And we actually want to work on a model for the adults, because we think that enhancing the lives of those parents will allow them to participate in their child's life in a much more sustainable way. So we're talking about having educational access to digital media, access to computers, all the things associated with job training and other aspects of enhancing that person's life.
Well, Derek Clark, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times, getting our conversation started talking about community schools.
You're right.
And happy Thanksgiving to you as well.
Thank you very much, Marty. Same to you.
And again, Darrell Clark, Philadelphia City Council President, the first of four guests in this hour of Radio Times talking about community schools. We're going to take a very short break, and we'll be talking with Superintendent Height and our own Kevin McCory, education reporter here at WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are talking about community schools in this hour of the show. They have become a rather hot topic. Districts across the country, including here in Philadelphia, are looking to open schools based on this model. And the model includes more than just academics when it comes to students. It includes an array of health and social services, also providing services to residents living in the nearby neighborhood. Joining us now is William Height. He's the superintendent for the School District of Philadelphia. And Superintendent Height, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Glad to be back.
Nice to have you back. And also with us and sitting across from me at our WHYY studio is Kevin McCory, education reporter for WHYY's NewsWorks. And Kevin, nice to have you with us.
Great
on
to be
Radio
here,
Times
Thank
as
you.
Well. William Height, I was just talking with Darrell Clark about his enthusiasm for these community schools and the fact that he and others, including you, went to Cincinnati to look at one particular school, the Euler School, that seems to be in the sort of forefront, at least when it comes to Cincinnati. What do you see in this community model that can work here in Philadelphia?
Well, a couple of things. And first, just as a point of clarification, I was not on the trip.
Oh, we you were not? Have, I apologize.
No, I was not on the trip. We had someone from the SRC office go on a previous trip out to Cincinnati, and we all received the reports from that. But a lot of excitement, as you indicated, from the council president, from Otis Hackney, the new chief of education for Mayor-elect Jim Kenney, and from the mayor-elect himself. And so there was a lot of excitement about seeing these wraparound services that are made available to children and to children and their communities, and these services and supports that are responsive to the learner and to the needs of the communities and the families in those communities. And so, as I've indicated on a number of occasions, and you know this as well as I do, we welcome all of these conversations about additional resources in schools. Mm-hmm. If we can solve for a lot of the social and emotional pieces that children are faced with, it does lessen the burden of us trying to do all things in addition to teaching children to read, write, do mathematics, and communicate, and all of those things. And so we welcome the conversation and think that there are a lot of opportunities to expand upon many of the resources that are in schools already, and I heard the council president make reference to quite a few of those.
Absolutely. And I do want to pick up on several of them, William Hite, but let me get Kevin McCrory in on the conversation. And as I was reading about Euler, I mean, this is, at least in Cincinnati, kind of a crown jewel, I guess, of the community schools. What's your analysis of what's been happening in Cincinnati, Kevin?
We were talking in the break there, Marty, just a little bit about pros and cons. The pros for this are tremendous. The cons, the only real con is, does this take the focus away from the rigorous academic intervention that needs to happen in some of our really struggling, low-performing schools? That's the only con. Right. If this is a supplement to that conversation, I think that the sky's the limit, especially if it's able to be brought to the city in the financial way that Jim Kenney is imagining, which is pretty minimal.
$8 million.
But that's still a big question, and I think that's something that will be figured out over time. Exactly how can they devote existing city resources to these? What are the logistics of that? The point to underlie, though, I think, is that if you're going to have all these other things happening in a school building, there needs to be someone who's overseeing that and is accountable for that. There are these positions, you know, community liaison type positions that would be hired potentially, but still a lot of the work, I imagine, is going to fall on the principal. And so if you have a strong principal, you can imagine that this is going to be a really strong program. Where you don't have a strong principal, it could just be more chaotic.
Well, let me pick that up and toss that back to you, William Hite. One of the strong principals, he's now going to be part of the Kenney administration, is Otis Hackney, the principal at South Philadelphia High School, who's been a big supporter, certainly, of the ideas of providing these wraparound services to students and the community. Can you replicate people like that across the district here in Philadelphia?
Well, we have quite a few people like Otis. I mean, and Otis is a very talented educator and a very talented administrator, and it's one reason why he was able to do the things that he did at South Philadelphia. But we don't have enough individuals like Otis, and so one of the things as Kevin was just referencing is it's really important when we think about multiple services in schools to think about the coordination of those services, because our principals and teachers, for that matter, are overtaxed already, and adding more responsibilities to them, even if it's just the coordination of other individuals in their buildings, that takes away from their ability to really do the things that we need them there to do, and that is to improve teaching and learning in those environments for young people. And so, yes, we have some individuals like Otis. We don't have enough, and part of our development is to develop more individuals like that. And I think that as we think about such a model, we have to think about who will coordinate all of these services. And if you just think, many people coming and going in and out of buildings, Many adults could be coming in and out of buildings. Just the coordination of all of those things are extremely important, and it will not be fair to ask principals to pick up this as an additional duty.
Go ahead, Kevin.
So let me just add to that. We don't have a fully fledged community school in Philadelphia right now, but there are a few, and Darrell Clark references, that could be seen as models moving towards that. One is South Philadelphia High School, where Otis Hackney is the principal. Another is Sayer High School. At South Philadelphia High School, where everyone has kind of universally praised Hackney's job, the graduation rate has steadily gone up over the past few years. It's almost at 70% at this point, where it was in the 30s just a few years ago. That's steady leadership, and it's been his kind of brainchild and baby to get all these community partners involved, and he's been able to oversee that. You go to Sayer, where there's been leadership turnover in the past few years, even though there's tremendous investments from the University of Pennsylvania, and they have a fully-fledged healthcare center there. Let me just read down a list of graduation rates. Class of 2010, 68%. The next year, 63%. The next year, 64%. 51%. 57%. Last year, 48%. So you see graduation rate dropping from 68% class of 2010 to 48% class of 2015. And that's in the city council report, the flagship community school model.
Well, and picking up on that, and William Hype, going back to you, and I guess there, you know, and I hear a little reluctance in your voice, I have to say, but at the same time, the danger of trying to oversell something like this, and it seems I've been here in the city long enough to have sat through and watched a number of reform measures that come in. Some work better than others. Some are more sustainable than others. Is this the sort of hot new thing, and does it have sustainability?
Well, two things. Number one, this is—it's not the hot new thing, because these approaches have been around for some time now. I mean, and this—I mean, this whole approach started way back, and this emerged from some literature that was in place in 1979. And so there have been different iterations of this in and around the country. But here is – there's no reluctance, because I think we are always we're always interested in talking about having additional resources in schools. However, it is a concern, and the concern is something that you just described, Marty, and that concern is that then it becomes a lens through which we identify quality. And I think that as we deal with social and emotional environments and being responsive to the needs of children, we also have to understand that as the academic institution, it's also incumbent upon us to teach children to read, to do math, to problem solve, to think critically. And that has to continue to be a quality measure. And I think that as we provide for all of the other needs of schools and communities, then schools could do a much better job of focusing on that issue, but we cannot lose sight of that issue. And I think that's one thing that's critically important here. And so we could, you know, as we designate and as we get these additional resources in schools, and if children can't see, we're able to do vision screening and get those children access to screening and then glasses if they need it, or if children can't hear, all of those things, barriers. And I think as we think about this, this is all about removing barriers to children learning. But the important thing here is, are children learning? And so that is, and you just don't designate a school, a community school, and then all of a sudden children learn. You still have to have the academic initiatives in place in order to do that. And as the council president referenced, we still have to have sustainable and recurring sources of revenue.
And that's William Hyde, superintendent for the School District of Philadelphia, joining us by telephone. Kevin McCrory here with us in our Philadelphia studio, education reporter for WHYY's NewsWorks. We're talking about community schools, and there's a lot of conversation in the city about creating community schools in Philadelphia. And I see some comments coming in. You can also give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.com. WHYY.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Kevin, I just want to pick up on what William Hite was just saying, and obviously education is what schools are all about. And when you look at a number of schools and districts, I guess, across the country that have used this model, have they had the kind of education achievement results that people have been hoping for?
You can find mixed research on this, some that will say that focusing just on the community service side of things without an equal focus on an academic rigor will not yield more results. But there are some that say that have shown encouraging signs. It's probably going to take a generation to really understand the data and really understand whether or not this is working over the long term. I think we've been talking a little bit about the skepticism to whether or not this will affect academic results. But I think there's optimism here, too, which in theory, if an educator can just focus on educating and doesn't have to focus on the social and emotional needs of the child as much, then you would imagine that they would be able to do a better job in communicating that lesson or that curriculum, and a child would be more ready to take it in, right? So, you can't underscore enough when you go into schools, some of the highest need schools in the city, and you talk to teachers and you talk to the principal and you talk to the kids and the parents, just how staggeringly high the needs are.
Right.
So if you have something that's helping to alleviate that, you have to imagine that that will make a positive difference.
And just picking up on that, William Hite, and then I do want to get a couple of calls on, and as we all know about the layoffs, the school closures in the last couple of years here in Philadelphia, do you see this as a model that can replace, for instance, the school nurses who are, running from one school to another to try to provide health care for their students?
I mean, I do think it is an opportunity to provide additional and supplemental services to those that we already have. And if, in fact, this will allow us to get children access to health care in every school, then that's exciting. And that is something that we certainly support here at the school district. And I want to pick up on something that Kevin just said a few minutes ago. And I think that while I've heard about a lot of skepticism on this, as he indicated, there's also a lot of optimism because, quite frankly, depending on where children live in the city, those children could be impacted by things that affect their community and or affect their families. There could be circumstances of poverty and all of the challenges that are associated with that. And so having the ability in a coordinated way to address those issues is extremely important. And if this allows for the school district utilizing many of the city agencies and the colleges and the universities to do that, then it is a net addition to the services that we can provide for young people.
Let me see what Victoria from looks like Malvern has to say. Victoria, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
My question has to do with the utilization of the services of school psychologists. I think they're ideally trained. They're entrained in education and also in social emotional needs. I think with regard to the role of coordinating these services, they would be the perfect people to do this. But very often their services are underutilized in the schools, is my impression, and that they really would be the ideal people to do this. So I wonder if your guests could reflect on the role of the school psychologist perhaps being underutilized and being expanded under this new program idea.
William Hite, do you have an answer to Victoria?
Yes. I mean, I think Victoria has a point, and I would say, number one, we don't have enough. And school psychologists or school social workers or many of the individuals who can support the types of things that children need. So that's number one. Number two, thinking about it and thinking about the utilization of these individuals in a more coordinated way and in a way that is responsive to what children need, what families need, what communities need, I think that is the using in a more effective way that would then allow us to provide for the types of things that children need in order for them to learn.
We have a tweet. I'm going to toss this to you, Kevin. A tweet from Kay says, might be a good model. Sounds like Jeffrey Canada's holistic Harlem Children's Zone project, which spends a lot more money. And I know you wrote about that. Others have as well, looking at some possible comparisons there.
Yeah, and I think that that is a great example to look at. And some of the research I was referencing earlier studied that exact model and found that, for instance, kids who lived outside of the zone but still went to school in the zone and really just had the academic part of the benefit still did really well in comparison to the kids who had both. And the kids who had just the kind of social community supports but didn't go to those schools, you didn't see a gain there. So that's one of the pieces of research that's more skeptical of the community model making a big difference just in the academic output. But I think that's, again, something that, even though it's been going on for more than a decade now, is still new and is still evolving and is still growing. And it's going to take a while to understand what's really happening there.
William Hyde, about a minute before we have to say goodbye to you and Kevin. Daryl Clark, who was our first guest, talked about ramping up 25 schools next year in the year 2016. Mayor-elect Jim Kinney talking about 25 schools over the next 4 years. Where do you stand between those two? What's possible, I guess? I mean, you're the superintendent, so what is possible?
Yeah, so number one, I'm not surprised with the council president's urgency, and he shared that same level of urgency with me. However, I do think that you talk to an individual like Otis Hackney, who was able to coordinate many of the programs that were in South Philadelphia. He will quickly indicate that takes time and effort. And number one, it you have to understand what the needs of those communities are. And then number two, you have to, in an integrated and coordinated fashion, ensure that you have the right programs to address or to respond to the types of things that the children and the families in those communities need. So all of those things take time. It's not as hard designating 25 community schools.
Right.
It's much harder to implement those programs in 25 schools in such a short period of time.
Kevin, you have 10 seconds.
Marty, the most optimistic research says if you're going to do it full bore. Half measures don't work here.
Interesting. Well, my thanks to both of you. William Hyde, thanks for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Kevin McCrory as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Philadelphia Mayor-elect Jim Kinney announced recently an initiative to create 25 community schools in Philadelphia. These are schools that act as a center for the neighborhood. They provide an array of services, medical care for students inside the school, and in many cases for neighbors living in the area of the school. Joining us now, our fourth guest, is Paul Hill. He's a researcher, founder of the Center for Reinventing Public Education at the University of Washington, Bothell, and he's the author of several books, including most recently A Democratic Constitution for Public Education. Paul Hill, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good to be here.
I had said to one of our guests, actually the superintendent, about the community school craze. He said this is not necessarily a new idea. It's an idea that has been around. Nonetheless, it's getting a lot of traction here in Philadelphia. What do you think explains the interest in community schools?
Well, there are two things. One, children, especially in inner cities, have live in areas with lots of problems, and many of them are children of parents that don't have health insurance, so that there are needs to be met. And there's a big attendance problem in schools, especially the ones that serve poor kids. And some of that's connected to the kids being sick or their siblings being sick. So the idea of providing health services and other family services, even dental and eyeglasses and so on, there's a certain sense to it, especially in hoping the kids can get to school, be there all the time, and be well enough to pay attention.
Well, and I have to say, on paper, it seems very appealing, and in certain ways it makes a lot of sense. You're dealing with the whole child, the needs of the child beyond the classroom, especially in needier neighborhoods. It provides services to the community, thereby getting parents inside the school for other than, you know, meeting with a teacher over something like a report card. So I have to say there's something very appealing about it, but I also see that at least so far, the sort of educational results that people are looking for have not really been realized. How come?
Well, that's generally right, and it's to be fair, at least the best examples of these things in Cincinnati have not been around very long. But there is a problem with focusing completely on the external services that. It's possible sometimes for the schools to remain exactly as they were. And in fact, for the people running the schools to think, well, our problems are going to be solved by somebody else. And you can really see in some schools that have wraparound services that the schools themselves haven't changed much at all, haven't improved much, don't have a new take on how to teach things that kids aren't learning. And in the best example that I've seen of wraparound services in Cincinnati, the school does have a tutoring program that's quite good, but that could have happened without everything else. Huh. And what you see in that school is some real benefits in terms of student attendance, but that's about the main dynamic that affects student performance. It isn't that the school has taken advantage of the services in any other way.
And this is the Euler School that seems to be, you know, the sort of crown jewel of community schools, at least in Cincinnati. You've been there, right?
I've been there, and it is truly dazzling, the amount of community effort that's gone into it and the services that are available. I mean, full-time dental clinic and eyeglass care, optometrists and physicians and family counseling and some of that is available outside of that school, so kids who have access to the same building can get there. And it's both incredibly impressive and it's a little sobering to see the degree of investment, because though the city bond paid for the structure of the building that literally wraps around the old building, there's a tremendous amount of private sector, medical system, and so on, investment in that school, and you wonder how many more times that can happen in that city. And even in a bigger city, you the same proportions are true. You know, you get a city with several hundred schools. The question is, how many can you really expect the private sector to put a physician into and pay for? So it's both an incredibly interesting idea, but a little sobering about whether, to the degree it was developed in that one school, it can be reproduced very often.
The talk, at least so far, from the mayor-elect here in Philadelphia, Jim Kenney, is we can do this for $8 million, talking about opening 25 schools over a four-year period, relying on University of Pennsylvania, Drexel University, Temple University to provide some of these services. Can you have a system, though, that relies in many ways on the generosity and maybe even the volunteer community to sustain them?
Well, I think you can if the public sector does its part and it really is a demonstrated commitment to it, so the people, the physicians and so on that go into the schools know that they're being used and they're helping kids. I think you can hope that these donations will be permanent, but you also have to ask how many times can this happen? Right. And you have to do your math in Philadelphia, but in Cincinnati, a very big medical center is providing a physician, you know, half time in a school, and that's a pretty big investment. You think about what that contribution is, plus the drugs and the nurses. How many times are the medical systems in Philadelphia going to be able to do that? To expect them to do more than one or two major investments per system is pretty tremendous. So I think it's okay to think that they will do it, mm-hmm. but not okay to think that you can expand it indefinitely.
Is this something that needs a lot of coordination? And by that I mean, and one of our guests earlier talked about people coming and going into buildings, into school buildings. You need to be able to sort of know who's inside the building and who isn't.
that's true. Certainly in the Cincinnati case, the building was constructed in a way to make it very easy to keep secure. That, you know, there's one place to come in, and there was good tracking of who was there. On the broader question of how to structure appointments and handle the demand, that's a good question. You know, especially in very dense areas where there are lots of schools close together, you can imagine one school that was configured like Euler that had all those resources and might be available to 10 or 20 schools, but the demand would be tremendous, and you might pretty quickly find that some of the services, especially the physician services, were really oversubscribed. And so then you have a problem of either big waiting lists or somehow rationing. But the security question, I don't think, at least not in Cincinnati, has been a big issue. They built the building right, and they managed it right.
We are talking about community schools with Paul Hill. He's a researcher, founder of the Center for Reinventing Public Education at the University of Washington, Bothell. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
That's all correct.
Okay, that's good. Let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. And again, you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. You can also email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. We have Jill from Philadelphia joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Jill. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you.
You're welcome.
One of the barriers for children in schools is the fact that they are living in households with parents or grandparents or caregivers who have dropped out of school or who went through the Philadelphia school system and still have very low literacy skills. I'm wondering, in a community school, will there be services for the adults, for the caregivers, to help them improve their reading, writing, so that they, first of all, can help their children with schoolwork, and second, that they can provide a model of a positive school experience?
Jill, it's a good question. Yeah, and our guest, Paul Hill, is not an expert per se on Philadelphia, but the idea of providing services to families and, I guess, to the neighborhood. Paul, go ahead.
Well, I think it's a very good idea, and In the Cincinnati instance that we're talking about, they actually do have that, both as parent education and as family therapy efforts to intervene in families that are really in crisis that would affect the child's attendance at school. I think it's a good idea. In many ways, it's not as expensive as putting a medical clinic into a building. It has its limits, both in terms of the cost. It's hard to reproduce it. That is the kind of parent intervention you're talking about. And parents have to have the time and freedom and organization to take advantage of it. So it's not a magical solution, but it's a very good idea.
Mm. What about neighborhood input? How important is that in the creation of community schools?
That's a very good question. I think the one example that everybody looks at was presented to the neighborhood as an opportunity, and it's very hard to believe in a poverty neighborhood that families wouldn't like that idea.
Right.
I think it can be done with neighborhood input in a broad sense that, you know, do you want to have a physician in this school? That's a good idea. The bigger question that occurs in Cincinnati is that there's a broader program to promote community services in schools, and individual schools that are not the one, the Euler, the one that's got all the services together, it's kind of up to them to find their private partners and develop what programs they can. And the ones that are pretty distant from Euler and maybe distant from the medical services and so on, they have a very hard time getting the kind of services in their schools that was available in this one example. And so the community input side, in terms of what the community wants and can they get it, if you're not in the demonstration site where everybody's putting all their resources, it's pretty challenging for schools.
I see a tweet from Carly saying, you know, hearing a lot about community schools is not a lone solution, but no identified plan for improving instruction or leadership. You mentioned this earlier, which is, you know, and it makes sense. If a child needs glasses, I mean, they should have glasses so that they can see the blackboard or certainly read their books. But the question is the curriculum rich enough and good enough so that children are learning?
That, I think that's a very important question. And I didn't see, when I visited Cincinnati, an effort nearly as deliberate to improve the staff and the curriculum and the instructional approach and the time in school for kids as nothing to compare with what was done on the community services. And in fact, you could see that this school staff was actually feeling like, well, the burden's off us now, and it wasn't so clear that school was particularly any better than it had been before the community services came in. Mm. But in truth, the instructional programs in schools that are not working, they need to be improved a lot. Kids need to be taught a lot more, have a lot more time in reading and in mathematics, and be given more opportunities to see the where this all leads in terms of why you want to be able to read and why you want to be able to do math. And they probably need more time in school, as KIPP and some other charter schools change are doing. Also, poverty area schools need to be fairly funded so that they can hire and keep the good teachers instead of having their good teachers constantly recruited away. So there are things need to be done on instruction that have to be done no matter what. And the community service wraparound is a good thing, but it doesn't substitute mm-hmm. for those educational interventions.
Let me see what John from Reading has to say. John, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
Sure.
I just wanted to add, I hate to sound critical, however, after 30 years of teaching, I really must voice a sense of this is really beyond anything I have ever heard in terms of totally being unable to make it happen. We're talking about teeth and eyes, and I don't know, even know where all that stuff came in when you're really talking about working with kids and the absolute massive job it's taking to get through from point A to point B as we speak.
Well, John, let me just ask you. I mean, if you've got children, as you said, you taught for 30 years. If you've got children in your classroom who have bad eyes and they can't see their work, or perhaps they have hearing problems and they can't hear you as an instructor, wouldn't it be helpful to be able to get services for them in a almost inside a building where you're teaching?
Oh, absolutely. It'd be wonderful. It'd be a wonderful utopia type of thing. I'll send you down the hallway and you'll get your check and we'll have your eyeglasses in 2 days. It's not going to happen. Nothing like that is going to happen simply because getting through the day is happening and interfering with any possible thing like that you're referring to. You're referring to such icing on the cake. It's beyond imagination if you're dealing with what is happening moment to moment. I mean, here's another aspect of somebody who saw someone, another school in the Midwest or something that happened to be put together at the right time, at the right place, and now want to superimpose this idea upon, Philadelphia. Or, I mean, who has gone into Philadelphia and asked them, what do they need?
Well, John, let me take your comment and toss it to Paul Hill. And what I hear, Paul, is a kind of frustration with, yet another attempt to try to reform schools.
Well, yet another attempt to try to fix them in ways that don't fix the schools. And John, John is right that this can't be done everywhere in any feasible time. He's wrong. It can't be done anywhere. It can be done. It makes a difference. And certainly, all these medical services really affect student attendance, which is a big bugbear for teachers. But really, getting it, focusing on the instructional issues in schools, focusing on trying to get and keep the best teachers, focusing on increasing the instructional time students have, and maybe focusing on counseling services to help kids whose behavior or habits make it very difficult for them to pay attention in school. Those are the things that would be directly on the problem, and probably John would recognize them as more relevant than the broader big instruction. My fear about the community schools idea, it's another way to say there's so much conflict about fixing the schools. Let's do something else that might work.
Mm.
And you can't get around fixing the schools.
Paul Hill, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And bye-bye. He's a researcher, founder of the Center for Reinventing Public Education at the University of Washington, Bothell. He's a school choice advocate and has written several books, including most recently, A Democratic Constitution for Public Education. The the fourth of four guests in this first hour of Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about the program. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.